So again, my name is Lene Levy-Storms, and I'm a professor at UCLA in the departments of social welfare and medicine, geriatrics. Interestingly, my entire background, though, is in public health. So today, I want to build upon what my colleagues have been talking about in terms of a public health conceptual overlay to a variety of issues related to how do we get people to change their behavior. And people can include individuals all the way up to complicated healthcare systems. And my specific topic is on innovations in paraprofessional workforce development as a critical component of a public health ecology. So in my talk, I'm going to sort of set the stage about the specific issue among our aging population as it relates to the workforce. And then I will talk about some of the policies that have been put into place both in the past and more recently with the Affordable Care Act. And of course, highlight some of the challenges with those policies. And here and there, integrate some of the basic principles that my colleagues brought up related to principles that public health stands for. And I'll just conclude with a mention of my specific work and how I am tackling these issues on a smaller scale, but with a bigger vision. I have no disclosures to share. So this is an APHA-wide session, so let me set the stage with the longevity paradox. Basically, our populations globally are aging, and of course to different degrees in different countries. Here in the United States, we're watching our baby boomers enter the over 65 age group. So we have an enormous number of elders that are living longer. While age itself is not a disease, it is merely wear and tear on the body. It does increase one's risk for developing chronic diseases. That certainly could lead to any of the other talks my colleagues have given related to palliative care, hospice care, and also the challenges of living in different communities with these chronic diseases. As they deal with these chronic diseases, they may need assistance from caregivers. And we're really going to dig into that concept of caregivers much more specifically. But I want to keep in mind the public health lens on this, in that if these things are happening, living longer with more chronic diseases and possibly needing care from caregivers, a public health perspective would suggest interdependence is what we want to strive for. Let people know that it's okay that we are interdependent on our networks, that we can't necessarily continue to live independently throughout all of the years that we are so fortunate to be alive. And the second principle related to social justice is empowerment, okay? So do we want to just continue to look at the older population as being frail and needy, and these unfortunate caregivers that are struggling to give them the care that meets their specific needs? We have to think about how we can empower that those caregivers. So for a moment, to bring in a concept from Bruce's talk about social ecology, basically there's a spectrum of different providers that range from professional and licensed providers all the way through lay family caregivers. And so given that this is a public health meeting, I don't need to belabor the scope of the healthcare workforce. But what I do want to call attention to is a more narrow conception of the healthcare force that goes beyond acute care and primary prevention to basically include long-term care. So as we're living longer with the possibility and risk of increasing needs for assistance, we enter the world of long-term care. And commonly, mistakenly, people think of long-term care as being skilled nursing facilities. But actually, long-term care is much broader than that. And the concept of it is we have not reached the pure concept of long-term care whereby any needs that people have are met through a spectrum of in a continuum of care. So what we do have now is part of that healthcare workforce that includes, of course, family caregivers. And then it also includes the paraprofessional workforce that we often call direct care workers. And these individuals include a variety of subtypes, including nursing aides, which in certain settings are required to be certified nursing aides following Medicare and Medicaid reimbursement guidelines. And the same is true for home health aides that can also be certified. And then we have personal and home care aides. And personal and home care aides are really, just to pull the audience as did Kathy, how many of you have ever needed to bring in a lay person, someone that can assist yourself, a spouse, or your parents with care in their home? Okay, so these are the people that are not nurses and doctors, otherwise the multidisciplinary professionals necessarily. They may come into the home briefly for some reason, but under the rubric of long-term care, we're talking about direct care workers that come in and help elders get through their basic activities of daily living, including eating, dressing, bathing, transferring, and so forth. Things that we largely take for granted until we can't do them. So a closer look at the multidisciplinary professionals. Basically, in the acute care world and into the long-term care world to an extent with skilled nursing facilities, older Americans account for a disproportionate share of professional health care services. Interestingly, though, the number of geriatric specialists remains low across different disciplines, including medicine, nursing, and social work. State laws and regulations are mismatched between competence and the legal scope of practice. So basically, there is a lack of uniformity that occurs across states because of this mismatch. Among paraprofessionals, again, these are the workers that provide the major portion of the direct care. Just as an example, if you focus in a skilled nursing facility or any institutionalized long-term care facility, for that matter, nursing homes, assisted living, adult daycare, professionals deliver roughly, up to 10% of the care that older adults receive, but the direct care workers provide 90% of that care. And so there, interestingly, for those workers, there's a lack of standards for training, including universal competencies as to what do they really need to know how to do to be an effective, high-quality direct care worker. So for a moment, to give you some visuals on this, just over half of the healthcare workforce is going to include healthcare practitioners and technical occupations, and just over 10% would include the allied health. But a third of the work, just under a third of the workforce would include the direct care workers. And I just went through the different types of the direct care workers, and so there's roughly 2 million, over 2 million of these direct care workers that differentiate by these subtypes. And the largest proportion of them are the nursing aides, which tend to be certified. Now I mentioned family caregivers. Well, family caregivers are also an important part of the workforce, as I mentioned earlier. And this slide basically takes the previous slide and adds to the picture of the family caregivers. And so total, there's over 35 million family caregivers and a total of 37 or so caregivers, including the paraprofessional workforce. And yet, even though the direct care workers make up a significant proportion of the professional healthcare workforce, there is the need for understanding just how much care occurs in the home of for older adults. And in fact, that kind of care can become a career. So what is going on now in the policy arena, primarily with professionals and paraprofessionals, is this competency-based approach. And, you know, it is an effective way to get geriatric knowledge into curriculum. So I mentioned earlier there's a lag for different professions being educated in geriatric and gerontological issues. And so a competency-based approach would give us those standards that people need to have, however they get there. So to evaluate those sorts of approaches, there are clear and measurable practice behaviors with evidence-based indicators that can gauge the performance of those competencies. And they're often organized into different domains that can be tailored to different specialists or generalists. And so in some ways, this approach, a competency-based approach, fits in with the notion of choice architecture because it gives the target workforce skills and tools that can empower them to have agency, but at the same time be in a system that is setting the conditions that facilitate their carrying out high quality health care. That's what's going on now. Just to take a step back, one of the major piece of legislation that had an impact on long-term care providers and their training was the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1987, otherwise known as the Nursing Home Reform Act. And here was the first time there was a stronger federal role in providing care to our aging population. And there were major revisions in standards and the survey processes for different institutionalized settings. And training standards were put forth that included very specific numbers of hours of training, so focusing on the quantity and the scope of training and far less specificity in terms of what the actual competencies should be. So it also led to improved assessment of residents' needs. And this is interesting because of this happening in our history decades ago, but the Affordable Care Act now takes the concept of residents' needs or patients' needs to the point of person-centered care, which I will get to in a moment. That's what has happened in the past related to the direct care workers, including professional and paraprofessionals. In 2000, we set up the National Family Caregiver Support Program under the Older Americans Act. And this program is national infrastructure to support all of those family caregivers that we saw in the pie providing care to their loved ones in their home. Those sorts of assistance come in the form of information about different services, assistance in gaining access to services, individual counseling, support groups, they say training, and respite care, and also some supplemental services on a limited basis. So this infrastructure, along with the Nursing Home Reform Act, have been in place. A more current effort that's underway related to family caregivers is an advocacy project that is nonpartisan, and it is called the National Family Caregiver Platform Project. And this project seeks to make family caregiving more feasible and basically sustainable, noting that 1 in 5 adults over the age of 65 will need assistance for more than 5 years. And yet, in every state, the value of the unpaid care provided by families adds up to $240 billion in the United States, overlooked. And so the goal of this advocacy effort is to get on state policy platforms, priorities laid out from a policy angle to address caregiver needs in the community. And then we have the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act that came about in 2010. And basically, this had a variety of provisions that were focused on strengthening the direct care workforce, as well as addressing those shortages in the different professional arenas, and of course, redesigning healthcare delivery. And I have several slides on this, but in the interest of time, I'll just, you know, highlight a couple of things. The provisions related to geriatric health professions, education and training that are in there. Training opportunities for direct care workers that have been implemented by HRSA through demonstration grants. And then also setting up a National Healthcare Workforce Commission that can also keep the eye on the workforce through assessments. And so from the Affordable Care Act, it became very clear and on the radar of the healthcare industry, this notion of person-centeredness and care. And it really is the opposite way that healthcare has been designed previously in its focus on clinician and disease-centered issues. And so the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services are funding a variety of services using person-centered care. And in conceptualizing this, we're broadening the notion of health that, of course, makes sense with basic public health as being more holistic and including the biological, the psychological, and the social well-being. And importantly, with person-centered care, we care more about how the care is delivered and not just what people are getting. And its roots are in humanistic psychology, which also refers back to some of the principles in Bruce's presentation and calling for a holistic and biopsychosocial approach to health. Also with the Affordable Care Act is the notion of making bridges and perhaps integrating both medical and social services, including long-term care services. And I won't hang out on this slide too much, but I want to make the point about how with more recent policies we're moving to a more holistic structuring for the healthcare system and also in terms of how the healthcare system is operating. So just a couple of key points and some that aren't even on here. The competency-based approach that reflects more current policies for developing our workforce is in alignment with either communitarian or individualistic approaches that were in part discussed in Bruce's talk. You know, so in the United States, we struggle with how much of the social contract do we want to allow the government to provide to its citizens. And we value individualism, and yet we also value taking care of each other. And where that sweet spot is has been a challenge. But a competency-based approach can allow us to empower those that can take care of themselves and doing it for a longer period of time, and also make more effective the social system, the social ecological system of the workforce. And I wanted to underscore that what's been done currently has mostly been focused on different pockets of the healthcare workforce. And one of the things I wanted to leave you with is, if we take a social ecological approach to workforce policy, can we integrate the full scope of the healthcare workforce so that perhaps we can think of primary caregiving as being consisting of mostly family caregivers, secondary caregiving being consisting of both family caregivers and the direct care workers, and then tertiary caregiving, where now we're beyond what the family can provide, being mostly direct care workers. And thinking about not just the needs of one or the other, but of both. And basically giving people the actual training and person-centered care would improve their values of who they're taking care of and how they're taking care of them, and be more ethical. And just finally, in closing, in my own research, I have been focusing on a specific competency in interpersonal communication during caregiving, and how I can design and evaluate a program to train caregivers that include both the family and the direct care workers in using communication techniques to emotionally connect with older adults, particularly those with dementia. And in this way, I'm taking a small step towards the larger picture of not differentiating these caregivers more than they need to be, because they also deal with some major common issues. Thank you.